Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. When people think of the financial sector, they typically think of boring businesses like banks or insurance companies. But the ongoing global shift to electronic payments has created a new growth industry of financial technology companies. These businesses tend to feature recurring revenues, high free cash flow, and low capital expenditures. Financial services sector, which houses Visa and MasterCard, returned 28% last year, while the consumer finances sector, home to credit card companies like American Express and Capital One, returned 55%, outperforming the Magnificent Seven. Continued growth in consumer spending, a steeper yield curve, and prospects for deregulation could support further upside, though there are risks if regulatory relief isn't as significant as markets expect. Nonetheless, for investors looking for high-quality growth opportunities outside of mega-cap tech, fintech could certainly be a good place to start. On this episode of Insights Now, my new co-host, Gabriela Santos, will be joined by David Chan, an equity research analyst covering payment and business services companies here at JP Morgan Asset Management, to discuss what David is seeing across this space. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. Now let's get started. Over to you, Gabriela.
Thank you so much, David. David, welcome to Insights Now.
Thank you very much for having me. My pleasure.
I'm always fascinated about how people end up in their day-to-day job. So how did you end up becoming an equity research analyst?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was working as a consultant, and I was spending a lot of time playing fantasy sports with my friends. So, you know, studying lineups and looking at trades and trying to buy players, you know, low, sell them high. And I realized that I was spending so much time on it that, you know, for a $20 buy-in, maybe I should study stocks. It kind of has a similar feel to it. And, you know, I started investing in my personal account, and it was just something that I immediately hooked to and, you know, decided that that's what I wanted to do for my career. So I went to graduate school for business school and then continued to look for careers in investment management.
That's such a cool story. Were you into football or any kind of fantasy?
Mostly baseball in the beginning.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. All right. And if you wouldn't mind giving us a peek now, what's a day in the life for you? I'm sure it's not the same every day, but give us a feel.
A lot of reading. So research, JP Morgan research, company research, management research. But I think the two things that I really focus on are finding new trends or changes in behavior. And then looking for narratives that change my perspective, change a previously held view, like disconfirming information. That's where I think a lot of the alpha opportunities lie.
That's super interesting because these days there's a lot of confirmation bias, perhaps.
Yeah, for sure.
And you're trying to do the exact opposite.
Absolutely.
Of that. Now, payments and fintech. Explain to us in plain English, what are the kinds of companies or in subsectors we find in your space?
So I cover financial services and business services. Uh-huh. It's a bit vague, but I kind of like that because I get to cover a wide range of companies. On the payments and fintech side, it's companies like Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal. On the business services side, it's credit rating agencies, credit bureaus, asset managers, but also software companies like, you know, Shopify or Intuit.
Ah, interesting. And it sounds like your companies are really an intersection of various different sectors, right? There's a little bit of technology in there, a little bit of financials in there. Do you talk to a lot of the other research analysts in other sectors?
Yep, absolutely. So we talk to the consumer analysts, for example, where we're studying and sharing notes on the health of the consumer and their spending habits. Or, you know, last week I was speaking with our software analyst at the intersection of software and payments is a very interesting theme that we're interested in. And then, you know, just another example, we have a global financial team, and it's, I think, the scale and breadth of JP Morgan is one of our key differentiators. And we meet regularly to talk about kind of routinely what are the interesting trends going on in different financial markets around the world.
And speaking of global, then, your companies are global.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting. I personally grew up in Brazil. I've seen different systems. And of course, we all travel around the world. What have you learned from different countries, different geographies that's interesting maybe to developments in the U.S.?
Yeah. So one of the interesting themes that we're following closely is consumers' willingness to adopt their primary financial, like, banking service from an app, right? It's, you know, the mobile, like, wave has gone on for decades. Consumers are much more, like, around the world are much more used to giving their personal information to a financial app, right? And in Brazil, we're seeing this take off. Now, it's a theme that we're very focused on in the U.S. The U.S. has kind of lagged behind other geographies, but interestingly enough, we're seeing digital wallets becoming increasingly prevalent, the number of wallets that are competing, and they're innovating beyond just buying things online, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to expand into that primary banking relationship. And I think, like, we call it digital wallet wars. The winner there will be someone who, or some company who gets the consumer to kind of go beyond just buying things online. Mm-hmm. And it's a really big TAM, right? You think about all of consumer spending, credit and debit. And so I think the winner there will be a really big business.
So you're having a relationship where you don't go to a physical branch.
Right.
And know a certain banker and develop a relationship. You just have everything in a digital place.
All of that can be done online today. So.
That's really interesting. And I did mention I grew up in Brazil.
Yep.
And growing up in Brazil, I'd go to the mall, for example, which I tended to do a lot over the weekend. And you would go, and all the prices in the stores were not quoted as full prices. They were quoted as 10 installments of X or Y. And it's interesting to me to see, you know, a couple of years ago, it was very recent, this idea of buy now, pay later in the U.S. How do you see that evolving here?
Yeah, so buy now, pay later is a theme that we're positive on. I think in the past, there was a tendency for installment providers to not have like very consumer-friendly practices with very high rates, late fees, penalties. What's interesting today, and I think what's different, is the buy now, pay later companies, the leaders, are choosing very consumer-friendly practices. Mm. No late fees, reasonable rates, no compound interest, and, you know, that's like the key, one of the key differences. The second key difference is all those buttons you see online, it's very low cost customer trial acquisition. And so it'll be very interesting to see if over time, you know, consumers who are kind of credit worthy ultimately see buy now, pay later as a potential substitute for credit cards, right? It's a very big market. So if that can take off as a trend, it could lead to very large companies.
That's interesting. And how do you see those companies making money if they're not there to charge high rates or fees? Or...
Well, they make money off of the interest rate and also broadening the consumer relationship, right? If you can build a credit relationship in the app, as we talked about earlier, maybe you can build a debit relationship too and extend kind of that lifetime value of that customer. And remember that low acquisition cost of the button. That's a very profitable customer over a long run.
And we've talked a lot about the global backdrop and how it influences trends here. But a lot of your companies that maybe are listed here or headquartered here, they also have, of course, revenues that come from other geographies. And there's this perception that the rest of the world is economically doing less well versus the U.S. We've seen a lot of strengthening of the dollar, a 9% just last quarter. How do you see the global landscape affecting your companies?
Yeah, I'd say within payments and financial services, it's obviously a very regulated industry. But the regulation and the competitive landscape differ country by country. And so, you know, we have to understand each of the local market dynamics, right? So, for example, in 2022, we went to Brazil to study that payments ecosystem, and Pix was taking off, right? You know, like, as you're well aware, like, many, many consumers were using Pix and as for small dollar transactions, ultimately competing with Visa and MasterCard. And we used sort of our relationships there to meet with a number of different players in the ecosystem, whether that's banks, regulators, startups, to understand kind of the nuances of what's happening locally. And while Pix was definitely growing really fast, it was also increasing financial inclusion, which was a tailwind for kind of all the players in the ecosystem. So I think having that like local knowledge like really informs our investments in, you know, client portfolios for U.S. companies too.
And it's interesting. We keep mentioning Brazil, not just because I'm here,
yeah.
but because I think you tend to see in emerging markets, there isn't a legacy system and a legacy relationship there. And so sometimes it can kind of leapfrog what we might have here and go directly to the most advanced.
Absolutely. We look for innovations and trends around the world and see what other, where it can follow and where it can spread elsewhere.
Another big theme, of course, is artificial intelligence. And every sector has been mentioning it in conference calls. How do you see companies actually using that today in your space or maybe in the future?
Sure. I think in terms of artificial intelligence and machine learning, many of the payments or fintech or business service companies have been using it for some time now for either fraud management, risk management, and like similar types of activities. What we're seeing now for Gen AI, I would say, is companies using it for internal productivity, improving their operations, automation, having lower cost software development. And those things are helping, you know, maybe margins and bottom line. But in terms of incremental revenue or new products, there's a lot of spending on AI for experimentation, I would say. But we haven't seen kind of that return or revenue come through yet. And so it's still early days, and it's still a trend that we're monitoring.
So kind of test and learn for now, and then down the line maybe an additional revenue generator.
I think over the next 5 years, it will be a kind of a difference maker for the winners and losers.
Yeah. Another big question we get all the time is around crypto, cryptocurrencies, crypto assets. And behind it, of course, is the blockchain technology.
Yep.
Now, how do you see blockchain and crypto, if you want to
comment,
affecting the space, the payment space?
So when I think about blockchain and the potential for it to have mass adoption, let's say, in consumer to business payments, the blockchain part is a very good technology for a general ledger. As we study the payments ecosystem, that general ledger piece is a fraction of the total cost, right? Mm-hmm. There's customer onboarding, there's moving money in and out of the ecosystem, there's fraud, there's how do you handle returns or extending credit. Mm-hmm. I think for crypto and blockchain to really kind of disrupt or revolutionize payments, the scale and the like being able to deliver it at a lower cost than what we already pay in the ecosystem, which is maybe a high rate to some, like that stuff needs to be developed much more. And you have a bit of a chicken and egg problem, right? Because you need adoption to lower cost. And so, you know, when I look at it today, a crypto transaction for consumer to business payments, it's still multiples more expensive than the current ecosystem. So I think it's not necessarily a trend that we expect to happen in the near term, over a 5 to 10 year horizon, you know, perhaps. But maybe in remittances is where we might see it first, right? Because to send money cross-border to another person, it's still very expensive. And so that's probably where we'd see, you know, blockchain kind of reach that cost parity with the existing incumbent.
So, for example, you know, if you're an immigrant that came from Mexico or El Salvador, Colombia, and you want to send money back home, it's extremely expensive.
It's extremely expensive. You could spend 6 to 10% of the principal if you're sending $200 to $500, let's say.
Huh. That's super interesting. Any interesting policy items that you're watching that could be impacting the space?
Yeah, I think what we've seen to date in India, Brazil, some preference towards developing domestic schemes in payments that like with some national interest. And so to the extent how much penetration can those schemes kind of ultimately reach of the consumer debit market, and how far do they go to extend into credit? I think that's a major theme that we're watching. And then certainly the AI theme you talked about. For example, another sort of key theme would be like tariffs and the impact on prices for consumers, particularly for e-commerce goods. And that affects certainly a lot of payments companies who participate in that ecosystem.
That's interesting that there is a second order effect for those companies, even if they are services companies.
Absolutely.
Interesting. David, you have a really interesting backstory.
Mm-hmm.
You were a swimmer before consulting and before investing. What kind of interesting parallels are there from your day-to-day discipline and focus as an athlete? And don't be humble. Tell us a little bit about that and what you do now.
Sure. So I was a competitive swimmer growing up, and I swam at the U.S. Open, won the U.S. Open when I was 17.
That's
and
insane.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks so much. I was a member of the national junior team as well. And so, like, I think one of the parallels that what I liked about swimming and what I like about investing is we used to say in swimming that the clock never lies. So you touch the clock, and that's kind of like your score. There's not a lot of subjectivity to it. I think investing in the short term obviously is very volatile. Markets can move around all over the place. But over the long run, if you're a good risk manager, investor, portfolio manager, the market doesn't lie. The market eventually kind of figures out kind of how the world is changing. And so, you know, I've always liked that parallel as an investor to be able to come up with a prediction and see, you know, if I was right or if I was wrong and learn from it and and the craft of investing sort of is something that I've been attracted to.
No coincidence that there are a lot of former athletes in
Not
just JP Morgan, but financial services in general and investing. I've been asking every guest a bonus question, which is if some of our listeners wanted to understand a little bit more about your job as a research analyst or about the payments and fintech space, what's a book or a podcast or a movie, whatever that you'd recommend?
I would say, you know, one of the books I read recently that really got me thinking, it was a book by Annie Duke called Thinking in Bets. And in it, Annie Duke's a former professional poker player, and she weaves through, you know, professional poker lessons as well as lessons from psychology research and human biases, decision making. And it felt like the book was a little bit of a coach, if you will, for embracing uncertainty, but also more importantly, how to communicate that uncertainty in a broader team, right? I have this forecast, but there's risks to it. There's skew. The range of outcomes is, you know, very wide or very narrow, or these are the pre-mortem risk factors that I'm focused on where I could be wrong. And I think those types of skills that, you know, she writes really well about in her book are skills that investors work on every day.
Yeah, and it's poker is a lot more than just, you know, gambling at the in Vegas. There's a lot more psychology and
absolutely. It's uncertain. You don't know what the other person has, but in any one hand can go against you. But if you're playing an iterative game over and over again, there's a process to it where you could improve your odds, I guess.
Fascinating. Thank you so much, David, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for listening to another one of our episodes on Insights Now. This season, we'll be covering a variety of topics with research analysts, including utilities, industrials, semiconductors, healthcare. So make sure to check it out. Thank you so much.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed JP Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of JP Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of JP Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.